Hello and welcome to the HMEB podcast. I'm your host, David Cuff, the executive editor of HME Business, your source for news, trends, and insights into the home medical equipment industry. 2021 is a big year for accreditation renewal, regardless of what's happened with COVID-19. And today we're talking about accreditation site surveys. It's an important topic because there are a lot of common pitfalls that providers can fall into, so they need to know to avoid them. And they also need to know how to address corrective action plans as well. And that's why we're lucky to have today's interview, Matt Gruskin. Matt is the credentialing director for the Board of Certification and Accreditation. And you can find out more about them at bocusa.org. Again, that's bocusa.org. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing great, David. Thanks for having us. We're excited to be here and talk a little bit about corrective action plans and surveys today.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely an important topic. Let's start at the outset here. Despite COVID-19, 2021. Remains a big year for accreditation renewal, correct?
Yes. Yep. I'm sure a lot of our listeners know that 2021 is quote unquote the big year, right? And that comes back to, the implementation of accreditation for DMEPOS facilities back in 2009.
Gotcha. Yeah. So every 3 years, starting from 2009, providers have had to renew their Medicare DMEPOS accreditation.
Exactly. So we're on that cycle right now. It's a busy year, not only for BOC. I think it's a busy year for the DMEPOS industry in general.
I take it that you haven't really skipped a beat through the whole COVID-19 ordeal.
So yeah, well, I guess, while BOC and other AOs are still managing the facilities that fell into the reaccreditation cycle during COVID, it really had no effect on any of the facilities that were reaccrediting in 2021. I mean, that volume was still there and we still have to address that, just like COVID didn't happen.
Man, that is an onerous yeah. Task. Well, okay, so let's dive in. A key part of accreditation is the site survey process, and I think that even for veteran providers, it's kind of a thing, and so I'm curious, why is it important? Why is it a thing? And maybe you can kind of demystify it a bit, I think that people kind of put it in maybe more onerous frame of reference than it needs to be.
So yeah, that's a great question. The site survey process really enables providers to demonstrate that their business is following regulatory requirements that are issued by CMS, mm-hmm. as well as federal and state and local laws. But ultimately, when I'm talking to people, they need to step back and realize that the site survey process is really there to show that these facilities are there to drive positive health outcomes for their patients. When you look at the areas that we're going to survey, if you look at it from that perspective, I think it becomes a more easier process to digest, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems to me that it's, one of the drums that we've kind of been beating editorially is that this is kind of a gold standard that providers can use to show referral partners and patients, and then private pay insurance and everybody else that we meet pretty rigorous standards, not only at the federal level, but if there's state credentialing or laws involved and all that kind of stuff, licensure. It sure seems to me that if anything, it's a way to reinforce their reputation for expertise and service.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. And I think payers, especially in the private sector, do realize that, and they look at it that way for sure.
So, maybe you could describe the process a little bit, maybe outline it a little bit. How does the site survey process sort of flow?
Sure. So the way it flows at BOC, and I believe everybody does it similar, but there may be slight differences, is you apply for reaccreditation, right? So these are for businesses that have been accredited. If you have not been accredited and you're new entering the market, you would apply for that initial accreditation. But from there on out, the process is pretty similar. So it might seem intimidating, especially for these new businesses, but your AOs really should be your partners. And I know at BOC, we really pride ourselves on our service. So immediately you would get assigned a business development representative that would kind of help you through the process if it's your initial survey. And if it's a reaccreditation, we assign you a facility accreditation specialist. And that individual would be your point of contact all the way through the survey and preparation in assisting you with what you need if you have questions in preparation for the survey, mm-hmm. as well as bringing you through that survey process and ultimately the corrective action plan process if there were deficiencies identified in the survey. So we try to really really kind of hold your hand, whether you're a new customer or you're a customer, a reaccrediting customer, through the process and get you there to the end and provide that service.
Gotcha. So based on that, let me ask you a couple questions. First one, thinking about preparation, how does a provider prepare for a site survey? And maybe you could add in there the fact that I don't know this, are site surveys still virtual right now, or are they starting to resume in person? Are AOs starting to resume in-person site surveys?
Yeah, so interesting you asked that, because there is a lot of discussion about that in the AO community. To answer the second part of that question first, yes, AOs still have the ability to participate and offer virtual site surveys. That being said, those virtual site surveys ultimately at some point do require an in-person survey.
That's right.
In time, you will have a surveyor present, physically present at the facility. But in regards to the first part of the question, which is preparation, every AO does it slightly differently. But BOC offers a very, very clear checklist that's broken down into categories.
Uh-huh.
And what we urge our customers to do is take that checklist before you even send your application in and go through it and see what you have. Now, a lot of these reaccrediting facilities, have a lot of it because they've done it already. It becomes a little bit more of a challenge sometimes for the new facilities. But there's a lot of resources out there to help new facilities, such as there's a very large consulting community out there with a lot of great experts. There's just even online, there's a lot of resources that you could find, even from your publication. I mean, there's some tremendous resources out there from past articles that can help you prepare. But take that checklist and go down it systematically. And when you feel you're in a position that if somebody asked you, do you have this stuff on the checklist? Then it's time to apply and you would be adequately prepared for sure.
You had mentioned that, the accreditation organization kind of holds your hand. How does the AO help a provider through the site survey process? I know that maybe you can't speak to other AOs, but maybe you can speak to what you guys do.
Yeah. So every AO obviously has their own system here. But as I stated earlier, the Board of Certification Accreditation tries to really hold your hand through the process. So we assign either that business development representative for new facilities or transferring facilities, because we even accept facilities that worked with other AOs in the past as they can transfer over to us. And then for those reaccrediting facilities, again, it's a facility accreditation specialist. But I think ultimately the best way you can prepare, there are really four areas that I would kind of focus on, is planning your business practices. I mean, that's huge. Analyzing your corporate structure, reviewing your quality improvement plan. So overall, just document your business practices. And if you do that, I think you'll be ahead of the game for sure. The second one would be preparing your staff, right? So if you tell your staff, hey, someone's coming to survey the facility, I think that could sometimes be intimidating, right? So make sure your staff kind of knows and understands the policies and procedures and that somebody's going to be coming to survey the facility. Additionally, preparing your documentation and having it ready to go. That's the your employee handbook, your licensing, your liability insurance, you know, all that documentation, having it on hand and ready to go will definitely help with preparation. And then obviously, you know, remaining open and available during your posted business hours, as we all know, that's a supplier standard that's required. So, I mean, if you think of those four areas, I think you'll be pretty prepared for that site survey when it comes. Additionally, you know, take that checklist. I know BOC has a checklist, or reach out and take that checklist and go down it systematically and make sure you're comfortable and you should be good to go.
So Matt, you've mentioned this checklist. What are some kind of top line, you know, key items on there that are the sorts of things that a provider can expect to see on that checklist?
Sure. Yeah. So the BOC site survey checklist is a tool that we have under our resources on our website. And it really breaks down the quality standards into categories and almost mimics them, but allows the facilities to kind of go through it and identify areas that or identify all the things that we're going to really ask for and check for compliance. It's broken down into several sections. So administration is one of the sections. And what that's looking for is, you know, facility, corporate structures, policies of detecting, you know, counterfeit supplies and different issues with supplies, vendor purchasing agreements and stuff like that. Consumer services is another category. And consumer services is more really focused around the patient. So like complaint policies, complaint logs, you know, code of ethics and stuff like that. We also on this checklist identify an area for performance management, which includes, you know, data collection and error logs and incident reports. And then we also go into information management. Then we also have physical facility requirements, which are really the requirements that each facility is required. It even discusses delivery vehicles when it's applicable on this checklist. And then ultimately product safety. So it breaks it down into these categories, and under each of these categories has bullets that really are a wonderful tool to help facilities prepare for what the surveyor would be looking for.
And then you have the site survey, and again, this is an objective process. Like, you guys aren't helping the providers through this. You're really, you know, they've prepared, it's time for the site survey. Then you start doing, you conduct the site survey, and this is an objective assessment, I guess, is a good way to describe it.
Yes, correct. Yeah. When the surveyor's there, they're looking for, are you compliant with this or not? Right. They really are not there to kind of help you and tell you that, you know, this is the way you should be doing it. Mm. And prior to the survey, I mean, you know, again, we're here to kind of help you and point you in the right direction, but, and we'll give you the tools that, like this checklist and you know, share with you possibly a template if you need it, for some of these documents, but ultimately it's up to the providers to be compliant. Right.
Got it. And then if a, you know, obviously not everybody passes everything with flying colors. Sometimes, you know, a provider does have a stumbling point on the site survey. What are some of the common deficiencies that you see that might initially cause a provider to not pass? I don't even know if that's the right expression for it, but, you know, not pass their site survey.
Yeah, so it's actually very common not to pass, right? Initially. In fact, I think close to 70% of facilities, the last time I looked at the data, have a deficiency. But it's addressing those deficiencies. And, you know, we've used the term corrective action plan before, and that's what we're talking about when I say addressing these deficiencies. You know, we really look at, you know, the common ones, and we try to kind of coach people ahead of time that, hey, pay attention to this, because some of them are so simple. I mean, one of the most common ones is incomplete insurance certificates. And to be compliant with that one, you know, both your AO and the National Supplier Clearinghouse must be listed on the certificate. of insurance. And all that takes is the phone call to the insurance company saying, hey, can you put these two entities at the bottom? So, I mean, that's a super easy one, right? And it's actually one of the more common ones. You know, some of the other ones that, you know, we see a lot are outdated financial documents. So just maintaining good income statements and balance sheets and financial records. I mean, that will help it with the deficiencies we see there. And another one that's pretty common is personnel files, right? So keeping detailed HR records just really assures CMS that your organization has the right and appropriate training for their personnel that are ultimately providing devices to patients, right? So just maintaining those records is a common one and an easy one to fix, right?
And so then if a provider doesn't pass a site survey, like you said, that's not the end of the line. There's a corrective action plan, I think is what you called it. Tell me a little bit more about that. What does that look like and what happens with that?
Sure. So at BOC, the facility accreditation specialist would follow up with that corrective action plan, and it would identify those areas that were marked as deficient or not compliant in the in-person survey. And ultimately, there'll be a date, right, that the provider will be able to or required to respond by. So many of our providers respond, you know, immediately post letter. So they get their corrective action plan email or letter, and they'll submit the corrective actions immediately. And again, they could be as simple as, you know, an incomplete insurance certificate. So that's something that could be changed instantly, right? As soon as you get that letter.
Yeah.
So I guess to really answer that question is no one really fails immediately, right? You have an opportunity to answer and show that you can be compliant with all of the standards. And if by chance you don't respond by that date that is required, and you know, there is a risk that you could be revoked. That being said, you know, again, we try to work with all of the facilities out there to make sure they get everything in before that date so we can avoid that. And the majority of our customers are able to get them in, the overwhelming majority, in time.
And I take it that a lot of these, based on the deficiencies that you mentioned, a lot of these are, it strikes me as kind of, I don't want to say technicalities, but they're easy fixes. They're things that can be easily addressed because, like you said, they're incomplete files or things like that, you know, incomplete documentation, that kind of thing.
Yep. I think you're spot on. I mean, addressing these corrective actions sometimes is just as simple as producing well-organized or documented or detailed documents. Mm-hmm. I mean, just if you're organized, especially on that reaccreditation, you shouldn't have any trouble resolving these issues.
Are there any sort of deficiencies that can result in a corrective action plan that's a little bit more complex?
Yes. Yeah. And obviously we do see those on occasion. But again, as long as we go back, going back to that checklist, right?
Yeah.
Most of our customers review that checklist, and often some of those complex ones are the first ones they address, right? And I think that's due to the complexity of them. So they're worried about them. But yeah, I mean, there are some out there, you know, that could get a little bit more complex for sure.
Okay. Well, Matt, this is terrific information. I really appreciate you taking the time to swing by and share all this with the audience. So if people want to find out more about site surveys and accreditation renewal and BOC, where can they find out more?
Yep. So they can always check out bocusa.org, but I want people to be successful when it comes to their site survey. So if anyone has any questions, honestly, please reach out to me personally. My email's matt.gruskin@bocusa.org. That's matt.gruskin@bocusa.org. And feel free to ask me any questions. You know, ultimately, you know, we want you to pass those site surveys. So use me as a resource.
All right. Well, Matt, thank you very much for all the information.
Thanks, David. It was a pleasure being here and chatting with you.
All righty. I think we'll wrap things up with the podcast for that. Don't forget to rate and review the HME Business Podcast. And please, if you haven't already, make sure to click the subscribe button so that you get every new episode. Remember, you keep listening and we'll keep posting. If you want to stay on top of everything that's happening in the industry, make sure to check out hme-business.com and subscribe to eSource, our weekly e-newsletter service there. And if you haven't done so, make sure to subscribe to the print magazine there as well. Again, that's hme-business.com. Of course, you can follow us on social media. We're at HME Business on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And I'm at Post Acute News on Twitter. Lastly, if you have any feedback, suggestions, requests, don't be afraid to reach out to me. You can hit me up via email at DKOP as in Paul, F as in Franklin, that's DKOPF at 1105media.com. Or you can hit me up again at Twitter. Again, I'm at Post Acute News there. Thank you all very much for listening. We'll keep covering compelling HME business topics like accreditation renewal and site surveys. But for now, goodbye until the next HMEB podcast. Okay. And if providers want to find out more about you know, accreditation renewal, site surveys, all that good stuff. How can they reach out to you guys at BOC?
You can reach me at matt.gruskin@bocusa.org. That's matt.gruskin@boc.org. And I'd be happy to answer any questions, whether you guys are new to DME and a new facility, a facility that's reaccrediting, or a facility that's interested in possibly transferring from another AO to BOC.
Okay. And again, they can find out more about the Board of Certification and Accreditation online at bocusa.org as well, correct?
Correct. Yep.
Okay.